South Africa. What was your impressions of South Africa?
It was absolutely amazing. I mean, I use that word lightly. It was so I wasn't sure what to expect, but Cape Town was just absolutely beautiful, beautiful city. So, we had 2 week business study tour there, and the majority of the 2 weeks, maybe I would say out of the 40, 38 students, four or five students spoke and interacted with the teachers, and brilliant, brilliant professors, top of their game. But it wasn't because they didn't know the subject, but because of the confidence they didn't want to speak out in class.
Silly Conversations, the podcast. Your host, Denzel Mills.
Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting world, podcasting people, something different today, because normally I talk about stuff that I'm doing, and I'm either interviewing somebody who's a client, ex-client, and who is an English language learner. And today, which is quite cool, a good friend of mine, somebody I've known for a long time, is actually joining the podcast, who started out life doing exactly what I do. I'm going to let Mark, or I call him Mr. G, introduce himself first, and then we can get on with the general conversation. So today it's going to be two native speakers. Depending on how good our English is, you're going to enjoy it more or less. Mark, welcome to Silly Conversations.
It's a pleasure to be here. And I know we've been trying to organize this for a while, so it's nice to be finally on the podcast with you. And thank you for the invitation.
My God, you sound very formal. You don't sound like this when we have a coffee.
I wanted to sound somewhat formal at the beginning, just to kind of see how it sounds later on. So do you want me to introduce myself, who I am?
Yeah, I mean, well, don't go into too much detail, just what you're comfortable with sharing with people.
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm Mark Wams. I'm from Ireland originally, but I've lived in many places around the world. Not many, I suppose. I've lived in Australia for 2 years, and lived in England for 7 years, and now here in Valencia for just over 15 years. So quite a few
places. So this is the longest place you've lived outside of family home, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I guess like most people, I don't know, I'm sure we're going to talk about it, but most people who come here after a couple of months thinking, okay, I'll stay, or will I stay, or won't I stay? And you just get this Valencia bug, and here we are after so many years. And I cannot see myself living anywhere else at the moment. I mean, a lot of people ask me, would you like to live? You're set to stay in Valencia, which, who knows? But for the foreseeable future, I can't see myself moving.
Yeah, I mean, quality of life. I mean, there was one thing, because obviously years and years ago, I suppose when we both came, Valencia was also economically really, really good to be living, a place to be living, but also in terms of quality of life. Even now, things have gone up, it's much more expensive, but still, when we talk about quality of life, I think it's very difficult to beat Valencia or this part of Spain in comparison to, obviously you've lived in many more places than me, but I think it's very difficult to kind of beat this quality of life, really.
Sure. No, absolutely. I mean, I know we complain now, and obviously we're in August, but we complain about the heat, but get over this month of August, and then September, October, it's just beautiful weather, and it's really, really nice.
No, I think with this global warming, I think September and October is going to be like the old June, July.
Yeah.
And then I think the kind of key point in about maybe 10 years' time will be November and December. November and December will be the perfect month.
Yeah.
That's how global warming is going to affect us for sure in this area. I mean, just a little thing, because like I said, I've kind of alluded, I use words like elude. Mm. I've alluded to you teaching English, and you've talked about, living in various places.
Yeah.
So what was the kind of draw, what kind of pulled you to Valencia?
It's a good question, because I was traveling before I came to Valencia. I was traveling through South America for 6 months. I took the chance to go backpacking when I gave up a really good job in Formula One in England, and decided to, why not go backpacking? That's something I wanted to do. I mean, I traveled before through Asia and Thailand and into Australia, and I just thought I bit more of a, I have the travel bug still. I wanted to do some more backpacking. A little bit older, and I said, okay, I'm going to go to, after lots of research and so on, I decided to go to South America for 6 months. So after the South American trip, I came back, and that was September 2008. And of course, this was the very, you know, start of the global economic crisis, the very, very beginning of it all. So I stuck it out in England for another 4 or 5 months, and I thought, I have to, you know, try and look for something else, other opportunities. And lots of my friends were saying, you know, maybe you should, you know, go and work in the shops or in Tesco's. No offense, people who work in Tesco's, and they said, lady, you have to go and get something, you know, because I wasn't usually getting any work. I got some work in B&Q, in some marketing jobs, but, you know, not a lot to keep me going. And I thought, I had some savings still left over from my trip. And I thought, where can I go and, you know, keep learning Spanish? Because I had some Spanish then with my 6 months. Done some research on places in Spain, and then looked at Barcelona. Obviously, didn't want to go to Barcelona. There's lots of tourists. I didn't want to go to somewhere that was made, that had a lot of English speakers, if I'm honest. And Valencia, I looked at Valencia, and Formula One had been here, or was here at the time when I came as well, and events, and America's Cup had just been here. So I thought, I get a job in events fairly easy. I didn't choose Madrid because it's a big city. I didn't want a big city. So, you know, Valencia kind of ticked all the boxes originally. And I'd done lots of research about the sun and the weather and 300 days a year, good lifestyle. I thought, wow, you know, it can't be all that bad.
Now, there's one thing he said when he said, oh, I didn't want Barcelona or Madrid because there's too many tourists and also a lot of people speak English. So that's why I chose Valencia. Now, it's very important, just in case people go nuts. I would still say, as much as we work in the kind of language training and teaching English, etc., I would still say there is maybe a lower level in comparison per population, etc., of quality English. I think there's a lot of people in Valencia who have some English, and obviously because of the tourism and Valencia community. But I think maybe, like you said, places like Madrid or Barcelona, I think in terms of more professional language skills, whether it's English or German or Italian or French, in terms of professional skills, language skills, I think it's much higher than in Valencia. Mm. However, with this podcast and all the things Mark is doing, and all the things I'm trying to do, we will make a change. And I think we have made a change.
Yes, I mean, I as you said, I mean, you can see it over the years, even, you know, transport and going literally through the streets of Valencia, you can see lots and lots of tourists and lots of younger people as well being able to speak to tourists and offering advice. And so you can see it, even bus drivers are more, you know, not so fluent, but they can put a conversation together and speak to people and give them directions. I think it's a lot better than what it was. But I'm not saying, I mean, that was one of the reasons why what drew me here was this, you know, I had to force myself into speaking Spanish, but, you know, I don't know how Valenciano just yet, but I'm getting there. But yeah, I mean, Valencia for me was very much a women of prayer. I mean, I took a one-way ticket and my friends all told me I was absolutely crazy and I didn't have a lot of money together. And I remember just arriving. I always remember the first couple of days arriving here, and I got a bus into Cayo La Paz, and we all know Cayo La Paz. It was the first academy I started working on. I just remember all the bars being full, you know, all the cafe bars being full, and all these guys drinking beer and bottles of wine. And I said, there's no crisis happening in Spain. And I thought, this is great.
But that's the business area, I suppose. So when you came, did you have a job lined up, or did you have to find a job when you were here?
I had nothing. I mean, didn't know anybody either, and I stayed with two girls who were renting out a room, and they helped me a lot with my getting my NIA number and all of that kind of thing. And didn't have any work lined up. I had sent some emails beforehand, but as you know, when you get here, it's probably best. So I had done all the usual walking around, and two girls I was staying with said, why don't you try English teaching? I mean, they're looking for lots of natives. So I don't have any experience. You know, most places, if you're native, they really value that. And why don't you try it? And So I tried a place off Cayo Paz. Again, I wasn't very, very quick. I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, the person trying to get work, I suppose, is quick enough, but 2 or 3 weeks. But
yeah, it's not, that's not too bad, really. Yeah. I mean, a similar thing when I came, it was, but I came, but having, in a sense, family, you know, here or a partner here, but it was that kind of sensation when you buy a one-way ticket and you actually then just kind of sell up or yeah. you know, you kind of finish renting the property, pack up whatever you've sure. got, you sell whatever you've got and actually move. That's a strange, a strange sensation. But I think it's more difficult for somebody like who or people who do it like you when you come here and you don't know anybody. Because at least I was coming for years before and staying in a family or a long weekend. So I kind of had an impression of the city from a family perspective, not from a tourist perspective. But the same thing, trying to find work, like, you know, incredible. Because I wasn't going to come here without a job.
Sure.
And in the end, I got a job working for one of these bigger schools. I can mention it now, Berlitz. At the time, it was one of these big schools, but it was in Madrid. And I was in Madrid for, I think, a couple of weeks. And then I moved to Valencia and started working here. So that's kind of the kind of background thing. But one of the things which was interesting, just going back, because you kind of said you were working in Formula One.
Yes.
And you're getting back into developing stuff, hopefully, with Formula One. So what was the whole thing about working in Formula One? What was it like? What were you doing, et cetera?
It was fantastic. I mean, I loved it. I mean, again, it was one of those things. Going back to my trip to Valencia, I was living in Australia at the time, and I had connected with all the teams before going to Australia. And I had made the right connection with this lady who was working in events and marketing at Williams, and they were going to open up a new conference and events facility on site with the museum where partners and sponsors could come, but also open up to the outside public. And that was going to open maybe in 1 year's time. So she said, keep in contact. And I kept in contact. So I emailed her literally every month to see how things were going and tell her where I was. I'm in Sydney or in Brisbane or Melbourne. You know, I'm still available. If something might come up, please let me know. So every month it was like a quick email. And then eventually we built up this relationship. You know, we kind of knew each other. And then eventually she did say, I think after a year or so, maybe a year and a half, I stayed in Australia, that something may be available part-time at Williams to host, for example. They have the races at the weekends. And
right.
We're one of the first teams to do that. You know, bring partners and sponsors in to watch the race and then get the inside track of all what's happening at the track, to have someone from strategy talking to the people, the sponsors inside. So it was really great. And I said, there might be something there. You can work maybe part-time in events there and then part-time in a pub in Oxford, which I did. Again, I took that on a whim, didn't have a job offer, firm job offer, there may be a job. And I flew from Australia, but it was my dream to work in Formula One. And it wasn't my dream to work at Williams, but it was my dream to work in Formula One.
Do you think she just got tired of you sending her emails every month? You know, just say, is there anything? Is there anything? I'm still available.
Absolutely.
Is there anything?
No. Was this, I mean, I tell my students now, you know, this persistence, and, you know, if you have this persistence and you're keen for something, you're motivated enough, you will get there. And, you know, now it's easier with LinkedIn and stuff. So, you know, I send letters then, Denzel. I send handwritten letters.
Oh, and the old days of handwritten
letters. Yeah,
this is
before I went to Australia, absolutely. Then I got her email through this because she had replied with a brochure and so on. So then when I got the contact, obviously then she said, maybe. So I arrived and I told her I was arriving. And she said, so when I arrived, literally I felt like I'd met her. I'd known her for all these years, a year and a half or something. So much so that the staff thought I was one of her close friends. So there was this element of, oh, who's this guy coming in? We don't right. need this guy. Who's this guy? He's a friend of the boss's.
And then how long were you working for Williams?
7 years in total. So again, I worked part-time for 6 months doing the races at the weekends and part-time mm-hmm. at a pub in Oxford. Then eventually a full-time contract came up. And I remember, always remember getting the contract. I didn't care what, I didn't look at the numbers.
You just signed it.
Yeah. Exactly. I got my job in Formula One and I got my job at Williams. And you know, and it was an amazing time because we, the first couple of years we had BMW, and they were the best. You know, we had, we almost won a championship at the time, and it was great to be part of it. I mean, it was great to be part of something, you know, very, very different racing team, because, you know, you don't get it in a factory where you're producing whatever, Heinz beans. It's a different atmosphere working in a racing team.
Well, I imagine so. Making canned beans, or just basically watching the the conveyor belt go around with the beans, and then actually in this. But the thing is, though, because it seems very very interesting in the sense that these kind of breaks and these changes, because I know what you're doing now is another change, because you said you decided to leave Formula One, travel around basically the world, and then move to a new city. Then you started as an English teacher. So just to kind of put it into context, what are you doing now? Because you said you started when it was in Cayo La Paz, in an academy. Then we met when you worked for a private university, when I was there for about, I don't know, 4 months.
I thought you were there for longer, actually.
It felt longer. Yeah. It felt longer.
I thought you had been there longer before me, because when we met, I still remember when we met, because I used to go in for coffee, you know, because I only had 2 hours, I think, in the after coffee break at 11. And we used to meet, and I made my point to go in at 11 to sit down with you guys to get some feedback, because I was lost. I was lost at sea. And I remember you coming in, and you were very professional, as you always are. I said, this guy, he's been here an awful long time. It seemed like he'd been there an awful long time.
Well, I've been around.
Yes.
I've done the rounds, but in that place though. But I think I was more the I don't know. Do you remember Arthur Scargill, Union?
Yes,
I was kind of like, for those people who probably don't even go back that long ago. But Arthur Scargill was kind of like one of these union representative people in the 1970s and 80s. When there was the miners' strike, and he was very, very famous for being very vocal and sometimes aggressive, but a union leader. And at that time, where we were working in that particular private university, things like pay and conditions were just terrible. Mm-hmm. And I think I went off like a little bit of a Arthur Scargill or Eric the Red, the Viking,
produce some... Not long after, things changed dramatically. I don't know whether that was...
Yeah, but I left.
Because of,
by that because time, of what by you that time I wasn't there. So that time I wasn't there. So then now, I mean, you still work there now, but you're doing something different. So how was that transition from... because Mark has been an English teacher for a long time and he's done some other things, but then always wanted to get back into the whole world of marketing events and things like that. So... we've worked together a year or so in a project that I had, and he's moved from being an English teacher to, well, you explain.
Yeah, I mean, that transition from being, I mean, I was an English teacher at this business and marketing school that we talk about, and giving classes to the directors of the school. Again, just being fortunate in the right place at the right time, I guess. And they were in my class, and I just happened to say, I'd take the opportunity at that particular moment to say I'd studied marketing and it's something that I'd be very interested in doing if something would come up. And then a global marketing degree was launched, and only in English. So they needed English teachers with experience in marketing. And then, so I started with that. And that's now 6 years, I guess, I've been teaching the marketing course, but also, When I started with that, other opportunities opened with degrees in digital marketing, digital business, consumer behavior, all the different marketing subjects that I've been teaching, and also now in master's as well, master's international business. I work with that as well. So
one of the things I really think is, and it's kind of, I admire a little bit, because you did do some of the classes in Spanish, or you have done some teaching in Spanish, which is one of the things I would really love to do, some of the management training, team building, leadership, communication skills in Spanish.
Yeah.
Because I do think I can do a very good job just from my background in the UK. Mm-hmm. But you actually have done some of the subject matter in Spanish. And how was that?
It was a challenge, I must admit, because, again, it was one of those things that I had never even thought about, never planned. And again, a teacher had unfortunately left 2 or 3 weeks before the semester was going to begin. And I had done this project in marketing in English, this particular hotel marketing project. And the next semester, they needed someone, so within 2 weeks. And I thought, you know, again, the director was saying, you can do it. And I said, no, you know, the imposter syndrome setting in. I said, yeah. I can't do it. Not a chance. He said, of course you can. And the students were absolutely lovely. But the thing is, and what I found is, I'm not sure if it's the same from your point of view, but when I was in the class, I was more demanding on my level myself than the students were. And I felt I was communicating quite well. I was coming across quite well. Obviously, a lot of words in marketing are in English, so the students will understand it. And a lot of these students have studied English for 2 years previous, well, so they would understand a lot. But I was more demanding on myself, and my level wasn't that good. It wasn't good enough. But in the end, I really enjoyed it. And it was one of those things, again, had I thought about it maybe 1 month before, I said, no, not a chance. I'm going to have to pass up that opportunity. But I didn't have a choice, to be honest. Yeah. It was good because it forced me.
That's the thing. And I said to a lot of the people who have been on the podcast, some people who have kind of rejected the idea about being on the podcast because they weren't too sure. It's one of these things where when you're forced into a situation, yes, we have standards or higher standards for ourselves. And I think that's just a good quality to have. You want to do the best you can, especially when people are paying to listen or to hear or to learn from you. So you want to do it as good as you can. First, I think for yourself as an individual, but also then as you're providing a service or course or something, and you want people to get the best from that. But until you find yourself in that situation, you really don't know how well you can perform. Mm. And sometimes when I've done recordings and I've sent a copy to people who have appeared on the podcast, and they said, I really don't like the way I sound. But generally, you know, it was very interesting listening to myself and how I explained things, etc. So we're always going to be, because we are not native speakers of Spanish. And so we're always going to have our tone, our intonation, difficulty with pronouncing some of the words. So we're always going to have that difficulty. But I think the reality is most people in, from my side of things, the world of business, are not dealing with native speakers. Mm. 90%, 95%, they're dealing with people who are using English as a second or third language, maybe even Americans, you know. So what I'm trying to say is I think using Mark as an example for those people who are listening, if you still find yourself in a situation where you think, oh, have the opportunity to give maybe a presentation in English or a round table or some event, but I'm not too sure, you'll never be 100% prepared. Now, if you're an A1, A2, B1 level student, I'd kind of really think about it.
Yeah.
But I think once you're into that B2 level, once you've got a certain level of fluidity and confidence, try it. What's the worst thing that can go wrong, really? And if you do the preparation beforehand, then I think you can actually control a lot of the situations, especially when it's a presentation. Mm. Obviously, the questions at the end or the conversations over coffee and things is a little bit more difficult. But if you actually control and manage what you can and prepare what you can manage, I think it helps a lot.
Just when you're speaking about the presentations, I mean, on the back of those classes, I don't know which was the back of that, but the opportunity to do EMBA came up as well. And again, it was over a weekend I had to decide.
Yeah, because you did that it was all in Spanish as well, the MBA. Yeah, that's quite cool.
And so, I mean, it started, again, it was unlucky timing. It started just big before we had maybe 1 year in and the pandemic came in. It was cancelled. But, you know, you talk about presentations there as well. We had to obviously do lots of presentations for all the different topics we were doing. And everything was in Spanish. And again, that was something I thought, you know, again, imposter syndrome set in. And I only had a weekend to decide, Denzel. I don't know if you remember. I only had the weekend to decide. And Jan, another friend of ours, was saying, you have to do it. You know, you must do it. And it'll be good for you. And, you know, it was a wonderful, fantastic experience. But
I think one of the good things about this, one day we'll have Jan on the show as well. But I think the very fact that you had a reference for somebody who actually went through the experience, and then you could use that person to kind of say, really, what was it like? And I think Jan's a good reference in that sense. So Jan, listen more to this podcast because you're mentioned and therefore you should be listening more often. But she was a good reference. A good cheerleader, and I think that, you know, that helped a lot. And I remember you showed me the economics? I remember like we met once off for a coffee and you were showing me, I don't know if it was the economics or the statistics, whatever it was just super difficult, even in English.
Yeah.
And then I remember you said you had to kind of explain this and go through it in Spanish. Sure.
So that's one thing, you know, understanding it and understanding the topic, the matter, subject matter in English, and then to translate that, then to, you know, get it across to these directors in front of you who are then going to mark you in Spanish. And that's, you know, so it's a double whammy as such. So try to understand it. But again, and then I had to do exams in Spanish as well. And these are written exams. I'm not sure if they do them anymore. I mean, I was so nervous. I mean, it was a finance exam. And I thought I was the only one who had failed, but there was a lot more in my group as well who had failed. So, you know, I wasn't the only one at the first time. And then we had the second exam. But, you know, all of that, again, it's just pushing yourself. And, you know, had I not done that, I probably wouldn't be doing some of the things I'm doing now, but pushing yourself out there and standing up in class, doing the presentations in Spanish in front of all these leaders. You know, they're all leaders and CEOs of companies. Nobody is in the EMBA unless they have a minimum 10 years of working experience and management experiences. So I regarded myself a little bit lower than them at the time, but at the same time, we came out all together. You know, we learned a lot together. It was very challenging.
And in that kind of, how can I say, that transition, because you're doing it the other way, and hopefully in the future, one day I'll be able to do it the other way as well. You know, using our second language, which is Spanish, as our tool for work or our communication skills in that next level professionally, because obviously the day-to-day we use Spanish to present projects or to talk to people or to look for work, etc. But I mean, maybe to that external audience in a conference, etc. I don't know if some of the learnings would be similar to Spanish natives who are speaking English or need to do presentations in English. Do you think there's like similarities, or do you think the very fact that we're coming from English to Spanish, we have other difficulties, or do you think it's the same from Spanish to English?
I think there's lots of similarities, and I can see it. I mean, you know it as well over years' experience. You come across students who have, you know, excellent vocabulary, excellent grammar skills, but they just need that confidence to come out of their shell and to speak and do presentations or speak to you as a teacher one-to-one. And I see it all the time. You know, I was recently on a study tour. I think I told you about that. And, you know, for two weeks.
Oh, yes. This was great because you were in South Africa.
I was, yeah. It was in Cape Town. So we had a business school there. But just an example.
I think I can say this because we're in the middle. You were in South Africa, bastard. Okay, continue.
Hope you want to edit that.
I don't know. I'll see what happens.
So, you know, we had a two-week business study tour there, and the majority of the 2 weeks, maybe I would say out of the 38 students, four or five students spoke and interacted with the teachers, and brilliant, brilliant professors, you know, top of their game. But it wasn't because they didn't know the subject, but because of the confidence they didn't want to speak out in class. And then at the end of the 2 weeks, they had to do a presentation. It was part of their curriculum. If they don't do the presentation, they wouldn't pass this particular study tour. So in the end, it always surprises me, the last day of the presentations, they all do it so well. And I think, where did this level come from? Where did this confidence come from, number one? And where did this level come from? So they have it. So it's a case of pushing them and, you know, forcing them. Like, as I said before, I was forced or pushed into these opportunities, but had I not taken them, know, likewise for those students, you know, this wonderful opportunity for them, and they can do it. Just sometimes it's their confidence and coming out of their shell.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing I always, and maybe it's the style how I work with people. And then my focus is always starting from the kind of side of communication and building that confidence just to speak. Doesn't really matter if you're starting from, you know, a very lower level, just that confidence to be able to respond to very simple things and try to make it part of your, it's not a thinking process, it's an automatic response process, and then try and build that up as we go along, then introduce structures and vocabulary, etc. But for me, really, it's that confidence just to kind of respond first of all, then the rest we can actually, you know, put into place. Yeah.
I mean, so likewise in Spanish, I mean, again, I remember just breaking through that barrier. You know, we have this kind of a hill, a hump of a hill to get across, and we're in conversations where lots of people speaking Spanish and they got completely lost. But then as you force yourself to get into that conversation, no matter what comes, you know, we want it all to come out grammatically correct, and we want to have the correct direction to where the conversation is going, but just forcing yourself out of there. And if you make mistakes, that's okay to make mistakes. And then you can always say, how do you say this? And most people will understand. And but getting that past that point is really, really hard.
But don't you think there's a point now as well? Because I'm sure you're in the same situation as me. There's a point where sometimes you feel I shouldn't ask, how do you say this?
Sure.
Because I should know.
Yeah.
I'm a lazy student.
Yeah.
And we've been living here a long time. So we've been living in the environment and experiencing the environment. So there's a point where sometimes you don't feel comfortable saying, how do I say this?
Sure.
There's another point where you think, oh, I should know this because of the amount of time I've been
here. Absolutely.
And the other point is people expect you to know certain things for the amount of time you've been here.
And actually, sometimes, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm sometimes embarrassed when they say, how long have you been living here? And I said, are they asking me this because my level is so bad? Are they asking me this just in general? I'm like, 16 years?
Yeah.
Wow. So I don't know. That's me just overthinking, I guess.
I don't know, but it is one of these things where I remember, this is like little anecdotes. Mm. I remember after about, I don't know, maybe, or probably even 10 years, after 10 years living here, and I was going somewhere, and my shoelaces broke. Those were the days when people wore proper shoes. I was a proper shoes wearer. Yeah. And my shoelaces broke. And after about 10 years, I realized I didn't know the word for shoelaces in Spanish because it's not anything you ever need.
Vocabulary, yeah.
So I actually went into the shop and I kind of was in the shop and I was there standing and I was thinking, I have no idea what the word is. So in the end, I kind of like lift up my foot, pointed at my shoes and said to the woman, ¿Tienes estos? No sé cómo se llama. You know, I said, oh, cordones. I said, okay, cordones, yeah. But that out of necessity, you know, that kind of stayed with me. The funny thing is that like 10 years, in the first, I don't know, 6 or 8 months living here, I actually knew certain things because I had to do some painting in the apartment that I was living in and some things. So I knew like a lot of vocabulary related to paint and DIY things, etc. But basic things like shoelaces, which is something which never enters your vocabulary, or certain things with clothes where you can just look and you don't need to ask. So there's gaps in your vocabulary, and I think there's gaps in English learners, doesn't matter their nationality, vocabulary, because it's not something that you are actively
using,
or it's not something it's using, or it's not something that's necessary. So yeah, but I always remember that story, that's cordones. You know, I was walking around,
I still get blanks.
Yes, and then you do. That's the other thing, you also get blanks, and you think, you start the sentence and you think, uy, no recuerdo cómo se llama.
What the word is, yeah. And sometimes, and I don't know if it happens to you as well, I mean, I find as well, if I'm teaching or in class, the Spanish words start coming out.
Yes.
Like I have to change back. Most of my students are Spanish speakers, but some of them are international speakers, so I can't. This comes out naturally now because
it's
most days.
Yeah, that's a weird thing when people say, you know, how do you say this? And you say the Spanish word,
and then
they tell you, yeah, but eso es en español. And he's like, okay. And then the English word, you kind of really struggle.
You do.
And you know, the worst thing is for me sometimes is when it's like maybe a word that they've asked in Spanish, which maybe you haven't heard for a long time or you haven't heard before, but because it's from the same root, mm-hmm. Latin root, sure. or whatever, it's virtually the same in English. It's just the pronunciation, which is a bit difficult, different. And sometimes it's very difficult to make the English pronunciation of the word in Spanish. Sure. And then people say, but are you really English? Do you really know? Because the words are so similar. It's just the spelling, which is different, and the pronunciation. So,
good example. You know. I give you a good example. I was in the, I went to have my motorbike fixed. I had an unplanned outlay yesterday and went to, I don't have to get it fixed that much, that often. And the alternator was broke. The battery wasn't charging. So alternator in Spanish is the exact same as Spanish, but then you pronounce the letters of the different. Don't ask me to say it now. But he said to the guy in the garage, said to me, alternator. And I said, alternator. He was like looking at me thinking, what's he saying? Yeah. So anyway, so I know the word alternator now. So
yes.
Cost me a lot. I'll always remember the price anyway.
I hate this. The other day, Wednesday of recording, the same week we're recording, Wednesday, I had to take my car to do the ITV.
Yes.
Okay? Which is the... In English, you call it the MOT. I don't know what it's. I don't actually know what MOT stands for. Motor Ordnance Test. I think that's what it stands for. MOT. I have no idea. And the ITV. I have no idea what it stands for. Either way. So I go.
I always get really nervous going in there. I always get really nervous.
It's like the dentist. It's like two things. No. It is. It's like. No, the garage, going to the mechanic and the dentist are the two things. Because you go in, but you really never know how badly your credit card is going to get hit. You really don't know. So I go to the ITV thing, guys checks everything, etc. I always get nervous going there because, you know, they kind of ask you to do all these things.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time, I didn't know what all the light things were.
Sure, me neither.
You know, so again, you had to kind of learn that in that moment. So then the everything was fantastic, except because my car's a diesel car. Everything, and it was driving so well, okay? Everything's perfect except the emissions, okay? Now, I'm not too sure. I'm going to pause because I might remove this from the recording. So I'm going to pause and say this and then pause after and I might remove it. So the emissions. So it says everything is perfect except the emissions. It's supposed to be 0.6 per, I don't know, X milligrams or whatever. Yours was 2.6.
Oh, a lot.
Okay. And I, thank you very much. And I said 2.6. I said to the guy, I said, 0.6 for a diesel car is virtually impossible, I think. And he said, no, you know, this is it. I know these are the emissions, but 2.6. So you need to either get the heads cleaned or something and put that fluid in and try and do longer runs in the car, etc. And then you've got 60 days to do it. But I thought 2.6. And the worst thing about it, there was a Ford Fiesta from 1987 in the next bay.
You look at the competition, don't you?
And I just thought,
how is he going to pass? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I just wished he didn't pass. You know, I had to leave, but I wished he didn't pass.
Yeah.
So that's the experience with cars and things. And so generally, we talked about, just going back a bit because we got sidetracked, South Africa. What was your impressions of South Africa?
It was absolutely amazing. I mean, I use that word lightly. It was absolutely, you know, way beyond what I was thinking was going to be. I mean, I'm not sure. I didn't have... Obviously, you know, you hear all the stories about South Africa being a bit dangerous and so on. And so I wasn't sure what to expect. But Cape Town was just absolutely beautiful, beautiful city, beautiful port area and the beaches nearby. I mean, you have Table Mountain, literally towering over the city. As you know, you've got that, you know, landscape. The city then has literally two sides to it around Table Mountain. And absolutely beautiful. People were absolutely so, so nice and welcoming, hospitality-wise. And the school we went to, business school we went to again, was top of its game. I mean, we had the best professors with all the students. Professor, one of the professors we had was a consultant to the finance minister in South Africa. So he was, top of his game. And everything, you know, around that, the tours, the vineyards, and you know, the best of wine, the best of food, and was relatively, you know, cheap compared to, even I'd say it was on par with Valencia, Dendalion, maybe a little bit cheaper. And you have the best of produce, the best of wines, obviously vineyards nearby. And you have the Cape of Good Hope. We had some really fantastic tours. It was very much a good mix of social and academic. And then we did lots of some social enterprising visits as well. We visit local entrepreneurs, and the students got some feedback from them, and then they presented them some, like a consulting, mini consulting project where they present to the mini entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs, give them advice on their marketing and business going forward with the business. Is really great.
Yeah. And then in terms of what's kind of coming up next for you, because obviously you'll be continue working in the university. And but I know you've got some projects and things that you'd like to either get into, or you've got some plans. So without maybe going into too much detail, what's kind of like going to be the what's 2026 going to be like for Mark? That's the question.
You know, I have all these things, you know, I have things popping up every so often, and you probably know I come up with this idea every so often. I talk to someone and it's a connection. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but again, going back to my persistence at Williams, and eventually something will. I mean, I've developed this business masterclass on the business of Formula One, and I've presented it to many universities, and I presented it also to the university I'm working at now. And unfortunately, at the time, it wasn't the right time, because it was in English, and it was 4 or 5 years ago, as we talked before, the level. So we published it and we put it online, and we didn't have a big uptake. So unfortunately, we didn't run it. But I've stuck with that original idea. And again, every 6 months or every couple of months, I send it off to various universities. I recently was in Madrid at a sports summit in Madrid. It was fantastic. It was 2 or 3 days of presentations from world leaders in sports around the world. And I happened to connect with another university there. So, and they're very, very interested. So I'm hoping
well, first of all, the sports summit or activities is obviously something I couldn't go to, because this guy does cycling as well. Does like these crazy millions of kilometers cycling. So anyway, that's why I went to the sports summit thing. I wouldn't go to the sports summit thing because they wouldn't let me in, because I don't look sporty enough. Well, no, I look sporty. But I don't do sport. Yeah. But anyway, the point is, this proposal for this other university, which kind of is interested in, is it going to be in English, or is it going to be a mix of half English, half Spanish? How do you see it?
In English at the beginning, but they offer this, for example, as a sports MBA, and they want to try and combine some different sports rather than, so they have tennis, they have football, and so they want to bring Formula One and motorsport into it, because again, with the connection with Madrid, Madrid is hosting the Formula One next year in September. This university has a connection with the FEMA, which is Madrid Cup, who are organizing the Formula One in Madrid. So there's a bit of a connection there. So they want to offer their students, international students, and it's an association with this leading sports man. I'm not sure if I can mention him. So it's that connection, but also then offering another, I suppose, another module, another masterclass in Formula One. So they're very interested in that. So it's a 5-hour course, but then, for example, for day two, we could offer some facilities like pit stop practice with a real Formula One car, and all the teams will work together and practice what you see in Formula One every second weekend. And I'm not sure we get the times that McLaren got last week of 2 seconds or something, but you know, the whole team of the whole idea of teams working together to achieve one goal, practicing all the time like they do in Formula One. So a bit of academic side on the first day and the business cases and case studies related to Formula One. And then the second day, more interactive activities. And then it comes together as a whole.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Mm. Now, I know the reach of this podcast. Mm. and the reach is not very much reach. But you never know. Something may happen and somebody may know a person who would like to promote this kind of thing, a business who would like to try and do something different. Because I know some businesses, some of the companies I've worked with this year, and they had some kind of team building activities. Mm. And I have to admit, they were very poor based on the descriptions the students gave me. Now, maybe I have a higher expectation. And obviously, when we talk about this idea of team building, depends. You know, some things are just, how can I say, present or light events to say thank you to the workers, and other things could be really to solve problems and difficulties in terms of communication. But if you are a business person and you are interested or would like maybe to do something like that for your company at some time in the future, you can get in touch with me and I can pass that details on to Mark, and or even in the future, because I'm sure Mark will come back and we'll just do another one of these chit-chats and catching up anyway. You know, I think that's quite cool. What do you think, you know, let's kind of, before we kind of close it out, what do you think we as, I don't know, I never liked the word expats, but anyway, what do you think as we as natives, speakers, Irish, English, Welsh, I'm not really going to talk about the Germans and French and Italians because I don't really know that kind of structure, but people from the UK and Ireland, what do you think we don't do, or what do you think we need to do to kind of, I don't know, improve our lives here? Maybe we don't need to do anything. I'm not too sure. But what do you think we're missing sometimes in terms of living in, you know, a city like Valencia or the Valencia community, and we could do to improve or connect more or whatever?
I think, you know, the one thing that I think we all maybe did at the beginning when we first arrived is you tend to stick with, as you said, expats or your friends or English speakers. You know, I mean, I remember going to the Irish bars, I remember going to the Portland American bar, which is still here and still going strong in the center. But then, you know, I just thought to myself, I could do this at home. I could do this in Australia, where I lived, in England, where I lived. And I've come to Spain to get myself more involved with the Spanish culture and the Spanish lifestyle. And the only way you can do that is to learn the language and appreciate it more. And leading on to that, I was lucky again. I still have a very good friend who forced me again. You know, pushed me to meet for coffees and pushed me to go for a beer with him. And, you know, again, give me the confidence to speak with him and to, you know, make the mistakes and so on. And he would kept encouraging me. And had it not been for him, I wouldn't be speaking Spanish today. And I'm sure we meet every so often. He lives in Madrid and we laugh and joke about it only for him. But I think we really need to make that effort, forcing ourselves into, you know, taking the language course, learning the language, and then interacting with the locals. You know, for example, here in my building, you know, I wouldn't be able to interact with my neighbors up on the next floor up or the next floor down when I meet them in the hallway. And in the barrio where we live, you live in a barrio as well. So it feels like a little village feel. And I wouldn't have these conversations in the street with the locals because I know them. I know their faces now, as you know as well. So we wouldn't have that interaction if we didn't have Spanish because they wouldn't be able to speak to us.
And the thing is, I mean, I think as well, I kind of sometimes think, oh, I would really love to speak Spanish. When you see younger people, different nationalities, and maybe they actually went to school here in Spain, or they were actually born in Spain from different cultures, but they were born in Spain. So they're Spanish, you know? And sometimes there's a little bit of jealousy thinking, I'd love to speak like that person, you know? Or even somebody who's just very good, now on my YouTube feed, you know, you start looking at something and the algorithm starts to send you things, etc. And I'm going to do a little chat about this as well. But you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be, you don't have to be perfect. It's about just with a smile, bit of conversation, making the effort and understanding or looking at and seeing how people interact and try and do that. Now, as a person who's not very, very sociable, okay, my work is sociable. That's one thing. But as a person who's not very sociable, I still think sometimes I need to make that effort to do that. And I think that's something which I think should also be transmitted to people we work with, your students, business people I work with, and anybody learning a language. Yes, we have a much higher percentage because we can listen on the radio to Spanish. We can watch TV. Not that there's much good stuff on TV. You know, we have the language around us, and we're immersed in the environment. And I think, and I say to people I work with, if you can try and add just a little bit to your environment, forget the books, but the listening skills.
Sure.
You know, take advantage of that drive to work or the metro. Instead of listening to music going in or going out, listen to an audiobook. You may or you may not understand everything, but just listen. Why? Because it helps build that those communication skills. That's why the majority of, well, not the majority, all of these podcasts are just audio, so people can actually get access to them at some time. Saying that, though, if you see me in the street, don't start talking to me in English because I'm not going to respond.
That's one thing. Another thing, if I can say another point, you know, we have to, you know, people come here, expats come here, and people from all over the world come here, come to Spain. And we come here and sometimes we try and change things, you know, that from where we've lived before in Germany or Spain or whatever, or sorry, in England or Ireland or whatever. And, you know, the whole point is, you know, the key word is adapting. We have to adapt to the way things are here. I mean, this is why we've chosen to come to live here, because this is the key to the words, everything is hasta mañana. And it's you know, it's partially true, but this is how it is. And we have to, because I've known people, a lot of people who are frustrated and they complain and they moan about things, how things are done here.
Yeah.
But we have to adapt. If we don't, you know, we have to leave and go live in somebody else. Let's go and live in Sweden or you know, other Nordic countries where it's a bit more, I suppose.
Yeah, or you go to those, I don't know, those areas in I don't know, in Alicante, Torrevieja, et cetera, those little ghettos. I understand the frustration but understanding that those frustrations are also the same frustrations people from Valencia are experiencing as well. So in that sense, those kind of complaints, I totally agree with you. I think when people, like you said, are continuously complaining, that's why I stopped meeting other English teachers, because it was either complain, especially when I left working for academies and I started working for myself. That's the main reason why I stopped meeting people, because people would say, oh, let's meet up for a coffee, etc. And then it'd be like 45 minutes, just complain about students, complain about work, etc. And my response to those people after a while was always, no one told you to come here. You can always go back, but you'll never have the same quality of life. And we're out for a coffee. We're out to relax. We can have our jokes about life and the mistakes we've made and general stuff like anybody. But if I'm going to meet you, I don't want to be spending the majority of time just listening to complaints about what life is like in Valencia. Because, but I think those kind of people would just complain anyway. Living in Leicestershire or I don't know, somewhere in Scotland, they'll probably complain anyway.
There's certain types, isn't there? But I think, again, you know, you have to adapt and you know, enjoy living here, because, you know, get past this first 6 months or 1 year or 2 years. I mean, it was the most difficult place for me to come and, you know, to settle and then learn a language, meet people, meet good, you know, friends, and then study and so on. It's been tough. It's been one of the toughest places to live. But get past all of that. Get all the red tape, all the documents done. You know, we've all been there, gone to the office of the functionality and so on. Yeah. Once you get past all of that, it's, you know, it's a great place to live, great life to lead.
Yeah, it's cool. So I don't know how, if you want to, because this was quite nice. And because the thing is, for you people listening, I've been going on having a go at Mark for about 1,000 years. And I said, listen, just come. Yeah. We'll have a chat. We record, edit, listen. You like it, we use it. If you don't, not a problem. Because I also think he has very interesting, a different point of view, a different style. And hopefully you've picked up on that. I was gonna do a definition. I was gonna do like a Vaughan system. Picked up on.
Oh yeah.
Picked up. Picked up.
Yeah, yes.
Exactly. Rubbish stuff. Anyway, I was gonna do that. But anyway, yes. But hopefully you've picked up on his style, his approach, and as the podcast develops and another invite, or maybe with Jan. With
I'd love
three
to do
of us,
it again, yes, for sure.
We can do it again and just have different perspectives.
Mm.
And I would like to do that thing with other people who are living here from the different perspective of us living here, whether you're from Ireland or Germany or France, etc., and just get your point of view or their point of view of what life is like here. And then the usual thing with also my guests and also my little rants. I don't know, Mark, is there anything you want to finish with before we kind of call it a day? Because I like to keep to my my times.
I go on my professional mode again. It was very, very nice to be here. And again, apologize for putting it off. I wasn't canceling it. I was just putting it off. Again, you know, there's putting off and procrastinating.
That's the key.
The biggest procrastinator ever. But when I get down to it, I mean, here I am now. And, you know, I'll say no. Friends of mine and family all say, I say no. The very first thing I say is say no. And then after that.
But I used to be a no person. I used to be in that kind of line of things by saying, first thing I used to say was no. And until somebody pointed it out to me, I kind of thought, okay, I'm going to try not to say no, but try not to say yes. I'll actually look at it first. And it took me a long time to kind of make that change. But it's difficult. And anyway, this is not life or death, to be quite honest.
No, absolutely not. It's been really enjoyable. I really enjoyed it. And I want to come on again. So tell me the next time you want me on and I'll be here.
Okay. Now,
I was very enthusiastic,
because this is an audio thing, okay? And I've been waiting to say this, because it's an audio thing, but obviously we're connected via video, okay? Next time you come on, let's organize the dress code. Because we're both dressed in white t-shirts and glasses.
Well, my backdrop.
You know, we just look like twins, you know?
Yeah. My backdrop is terrible.
So, no, because in the future, we're going to do...
video, yes.
I think I've spoken about this because I'm doing the web page anyway at the moment. So I think for 2026 there will be one or two video podcasts, and then we'll sort out the background and everything. So Mark, really, thank you very, very much for your time. It has been very, very interesting.
It's been nice.
And very professional you are. Super professional. You know,
I try.
This will bring the podcast to a
conversation differently.
Exactly. This will bring it up to the next level.
No.
I'll get past those 10 listeners and I'll get to 12 just with your...
Hopefully this helps you get some users or listeners or even hopefully people don't sign up or unsubscribe.
Or unsubscribe. But I think it's also good because, like you said, we've got that difference, and I think hopefully... got somebody like Jan, and there's a French woman who also teaches English here. I'm going to be talking to soon, and a woman from, hopefully she does it. She's from Croatia. She's a yoga teacher. So it's going to be different people who are here and talk about their life here and how they see things and just the general chit chat. So Mark, thank you very, very much for your time. Everybody, this was Silly Conversations, entering a new stratosphere. We'll see you on the next one, whenever that's going to be, because I don't know yet. So we'll see you then.
Bye.
The voices and the names have been changed in this podcast to protect the wicked. For any grammar, information, or correction, please ask someone else, not me.